This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
So I've been a journalist since 1990, wrote for MSM up until 2022, then took a break and wrote for The Conservative Woman, just everything I could. I started writing for them in 2021, everything I could on the COVID narrative, especially I've got a special interest in vaccine injury. And so I was waiting for that to implode from the get-go. And, you know, we know it did. Then this year in August, the Daily Mail published an article of mine looking at people who were vaccine injured in the COVID vaccine trials. And I'm just completing a second article for them about serious adverse reactions that were picked up in the trials, but people weren't warned about and then went on to develop. So I'm very pleased that, you know, mainstream media is now addressing the issues that we have been discussing for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, on that, knowing what you know now and seeing what you've seen, would you want to go back to 2019?
Oh, God, what a question. I mean, you know, the way that our lives are being manipulated, if we had forewarning of that, and I did feel that, I didn't know how bad it would get, but I felt it would get bad right from the word go. Yes, I'd love to go back and see if we could stop the juggernaut before it started. And, you know, we're still probably only at 20% of people who really have looked in depth into what's been going on. And 80% of people just think this was all very unfortunate and that the governments are taking action to protect us from it ever happening again, which is kind of depressing, really.
I don't know about you, but the whole event of the last 5 years or so has forced me to rethink so much of what I thought I knew about everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. From banking to our birth certificates to the secret societies that we never really took very seriously. We all knew about the Masons, but Skull and Bones and Bilderberg and, you know, all those other societies. We all talk about they, you know, no one's ever mentioned they to us, but somehow we're all talking about they all the time. We don't really know who they are. I think you actually did a very good interview with somebody who talked about the black nobility.
Francis Leader.
Yeah, that was fascinating and, you know, was a great window into who they possibly are. But what we do know is that we are losing our property, our savings, our money, our land. Somebody's getting it. It's not us.
I think it was Jessica Hockett. I don't know if you know her. She's done some fantastic work on the hospital data, particularly in the New York hospitals. And she said on my show, she said in 2020, she started off by looking at the hospital data and she's found herself asking now, did man really land on the moon? And I think that perfectly summarizes where so many of us are now at.
Yeah, and 9/11. You know, who was really behind 9/11? And when you've got, you know, Charlie Sheen, the actor, questioning 9/11, I think there is some hope.
Yes.
We've got a long way to go.
Jim Carrey is fairly anti-vaccine.
Yeah, and that's because his girlfriend's son developed autism after the MMR. So I came to vaccine injury through Dr. Andrew Wakefield back in 1998. Mm. And his paper came out 2 months before my daughter was born. So it was a really hot topic of conversation and one I obviously had to research. And I started out by thinking, oh my goodness, 2 months old to inject a baby. It seems too young. And I went from that to deciding not to vaccinate at all. And that was thanks to two doctors, one who was in my National Childbirth Trust group, which is it's called the NCT in England, and it basically explains what happens when you give birth. And, you know, it's for people who are interested in natural births as well. And she was a young doctor, and she'd been doing her own research, and she'd come to the conclusion that she wasn't vaccinating her daughter at all. And then my GP just happened to be a doctor called Dr. Jane Donegan, which is a complete coincidence. Jane has now been struck off, like any doctor speaking out against vaccination. But she decided to do her own research when Andrew Wakefield's paper came out. And when after she'd done her own research, she decided she was never going to give anyone a vaccine ever again. So it was very interesting, the route to coming to all this. And that was my introduction, really, to the way that we are manipulated by those who have more power than us, those who have more money than us, really.
The segue here is quite easy because we're talking about pharmaceuticals, and you've done some very, very fascinating deep dives into weight loss drugs, and in particular Ozempic. And this is, for me, also quite personal because I have a family member that's been taking Ozempic to lose weight. And my personal view, Sally, is that you can solve all these things with diet and fitness. You don't need to take drugs. I don't know if you know Tim Noakes, but I mean, I've had many shows with Prof. Tim Noakes. He's one of the greatest sports scientists in the world. And one of his big focuses is, of course, diet, nutrition, diabetes, and that sort of thing. And Ozempic is effectively a diabetes drug, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's given to people to help control their insulin, and it has a side effect of weight loss. But what they don't tell you is that the weight is mostly bone and muscle. And when you stop taking the drug, the fat goes back on, but the bone and muscle doesn't return. And this is a real problem. And there was a study that we discovered, 70% of people taking weight loss drugs in the UK come off them within 2 years simply because of the side effects. And they're not being deprescribed by the doctor. It's just the patient thinks, I just can't do this anymore. But it's interesting what you say about diet, because I've had to review everything I thought I knew about diet since I was diagnosed with a thyroid issue about 2.5 years ago. And I've always been someone who cooked food from scratch, was very keen on fresh food, didn't eat too much junk. But I always felt I really need to lose a stone. Why can't I lose a stone? And it was because I had a thyroid issue. But what you won't find from the doctor, even if you are somebody who wants to change your diet to control your diabetes, you have to start looking at keto. And doctors know very little about nutrition, number one, because they're not taught it. And number two, governments have told us that a diet high in carbs, as long as we've got 5 fruit and veg a day, is really good. And actually, it doesn't work. So I lost, I think, 9 kilos, which is about 20 pounds, just by cutting out, and it sounds like a lot to cut out, actually, and it is a lot to cut out, it's not easy, gluten, dairy, because of the toxins in the dairy, not because dairy's not good for you, but if you can get decent dairy, dairy's one to keep because it's high in fat. Yeah, unpasteurized, high fat. Don't get skimmed, low fat, just full fat. Grains, including rice, legumes, you know, chickpeas, lentils, sugar. Obviously, sugar's an obvious one. And that goes with alcohol, and that's always a tough one for people. And it was a really tough one for me, I have to tell you. But top tip, tequila is a very pure alcohol.
Yes, so, and so are some whiskies, I believe.
Yeah, and so whiskey, mm. You know, I was doing whiskey and lime for a while and tequila shots for a while. But I managed to lose the weight. And although I am not strict with that diet anymore, oh, I forgot to say, up your fat. So animal yes. fat, beef dripping, lard, butter sparingly, but also good ghee. No seed oils, obviously. Mm. You can cook with coconut oil, but they don't recommend cooking with olive oil, I don't think, anymore.
No, but there is a little bit of a myth, I think, around olive oil and the heating of it. There seems to be a lot of confusion, but my understanding, which could be wrong, is that you have to increase olive oil's heat to a level that is not really possible on a home kitchen setup. It can only be heated to some ridiculous amount in a commercial setup or industrial setup.
Oh, that's good to know, because, you know, but also be careful with the olive oil you buy, because quite a lot of it has something called pomace added. And pomace is a sort of diluted version of olive oil junk. Sorry, that's not very technical, but
no, it's good.
You really need extra virgin olive oil, and you need to know it's actually genuine extra virgin olive oil. I mean, I don't know if you have in South Africa Blue Band margarine.
I'm not sure about the brand.
So they sell it here in tubs, and I'm in Tanzania. They sell it here in tubs. You don't have to keep it in the fridge. It's basically plastic in a tub.
Yeah, did you say margarine?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it just doesn't need to be kept in a fridge. And we have temperatures that only really go as low as 27, I'd say, and as high as 34 would be maximum. But to have a product that you spread on your bread that doesn't need to be kept in the fridge, what on earth is in it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sally, before we get caught up in diet, would you mind just quickly telling me about how drugs like Ozempic work? Like, what is the mechanism?
So it mimics a hormone called GLP-1, which has the effect of helping you digest your food, and the most important thing is helping you to feel full. And so those are the two basic things, and it helps to regulate your insulin levels. So those are the basic mechanisms.
It doesn't sound bad.
It doesn't sound bad. However, it's a cocktail of it's not the hormone. It's a cocktail of synthetic drugs that have caused, I looked this morning, and I think we're up to 111 deaths in the UK. And I think, let me just quickly check in the US. The US, sorry. The US is 62 since it was associated with weight loss drugs. That's since 2018. But 1,039 since 2013, since those drugs have been on the market.
Sure.
So, you know, in the scheme of things, is that a lot of death? No, when you consider the population of the UK is 68 million and US, I don't know exactly, but it's 300 and something million. So these aren't large numbers, but they're horrible deaths. I mean, you can...
Hypoglycemic shock and coma you've written about.
Yes, and also, you know, people have had to have their bowel removed, pancreatitis, which can be fatal, aspiration. So you inhale liquid into your lungs. You know, really horrible death. One lady collapsed, frothing brown gunk from her mouth. She died. But the sad thing is, I think most people who are using it for weight loss, you know, they want to get slim for their daughter's wedding, or there's an occasion, or they've just struggled. But there was an actress in the US who had a bad experience with one of the weight loss drugs. And she said, you know, I'm a Doritos and onion dip kind of gal. Well, and this is the problem, that people don't realise how toxic junk food is and, you know, how it upsets your equilibrium. And also even trying to eat healthily, you know, trying to get food that's not sprayed to death with pesticides is also difficult. So we are in a situation where... even if, you know, like me, you were sort of following what you thought was a good dietary guidelines, I was still struggling. And, you know, I talked to so many people. I mean, Sharon Osbourne is a classical example of somebody who is not interested in controlling her weight other than using intervention. So she's had a gastric band, she's used Ozempic, and she looks gaunt these days, and she's saying that she's not really quite sure, the doctors can't work out why she can't put weight back on. So these drugs can be, you know, they can be dangerous.
But the thing is though, Sally,
oh,
I mean,
there's one thing, sorry Jem.
Yes, go on.
I forgot about thyroid cancer. And frankly, your thyroid is such an important organ in your body, or gland in your body. It's like the control center for your body temperature, heart rate, how you digest your food. And to be giving somebody that can cause thyroid cancer is frankly really shocking.
But the thing now about thyroid itself is that it seems to also be a bit of a pop talking point. Somebody is fat and they go, it's because I've got a thyroid issue. And so now suddenly diet no longer matters. It's now all to do with the thyroid.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an easy test that you can do to check your levels of TSH 2, 3, 4. And it's a blood test, and it will show you if your thyroid is overactive, if your thyroid is underactive. Also, if you check your autoimmune, you could have Hashimoto's, which is underactive thyroid, or Graves', which is overactive. And it's more common to have underactive. And it's 1 in 20 of us, apparently, and 8 times more women than men. Now, before I was diagnosed, I was constantly getting a fluttering in my throat. And I was thinking, you know, why am I feeling, and that can be related to sort of anxiety. And, you know, if you're feeling nervous about something, I'm thinking, why am I suddenly feeling nervous? And why am I suddenly so anxious? And I couldn't really get on top of it, although I'm a great fan of homeopathy and use it for most things. you know, it would die down for a while and then it would come back. But it wasn't until I had that diagnosis of thyroid issue. And that was made by Dr. Sarah Myhill, who I don't know if you've come across. She's also been struck off for prescribing too many vitamins. I think she went through 38 general medical council investigations. And And she's written a book, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like, here's how to treat your thyroid because your doctor won't. So, you know, and the first thing she did was took my pulse, slow heart rate, body temperature, low body temperature. I do find it difficult to regulate my body temperature. And then when I changed the diet, you know, a lot of things changed, actually. A lot of people have fatigue, which is something I didn't have. So, you know, it made me question whether it was thyroid, but the treatment for thyroid seemed to work, or the natural treatment.
But, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to know that if you're consuming bad food, your system is not going to do very well after a while.
No, but people don't know what bad food is anymore. You know, people who've grown up with McDonald's, people who've grown up with Pringles and Doritos and crisps and...
One, sugar-free.
Yes, classics sugar-free. Yes, exactly. And people don't know that. People have been brought up low-fat is good. You know, low-fat products in the supermarket. And people think if I'm eating low-fat, I'm eating healthily. Whereas they think if I have an avocado, which is really high in calories, and I have olive oil, which is also really high in calories, that's going to make me put on weight. And I definitely should be avoiding butter and animal fats as well. So people don't know, and they're not being told, more importantly.
So, I mean, it always comes back to the basics. You know, it's what our grandparents did.
Absolutely. If you think about, I mean, my mum grew up in the war. She was 8 years old, I think, when the war finished. And rationing during the war, where you had very little sugar, not much meat, that generation are the last generation who have increased their longevity. And I often used to have this discussion with my mum, who was actually a school meals organiser. So she was in charge of what children used to eat in schools. And long before Jamie Oliver here, she was saying that, you know, food at school should be a good experience. It should be well cooked. It should be part of the education, and children should enjoy school food. It shouldn't be something that they dread. But yeah, so her generation are the last ones to outlive us, I think, longevity wise. And I think diet was probably quite a big part of that.
The scary thing, though, Sally, is how people have become so dependent on treating the symptoms and not the root cause. I think you wrote here around 2% of the US population is now on prescription drugs to lose weight. That's treating the symptom. That's not treating the cause. The cause is, look at what you're eating. Look at what's on your plate.
Exactly that. But we have grown up in a medicalized society that only controls the symptoms. It doesn't get to the root cause. And if doctors, you know, wake up to that fact, like Dr. Sarah Myhill, Dr. Jane Donegan, look what happens to them. You know, they lose their license because it's so ingrained in our society that drugs are our saviour. I mean, there's a doctor called Dr. Neil Stone who posts on X all the time. He drives me crazy.
He drives me crazy too. Mm.
And, you know, I'm always commenting on his posts, but he's absolutely, totally convinced that he's working in this amazing system, that we're only alive because of vaccination. Forget the fact that vaccines have only really been around for 100 years and we've been around for 200,000. You know, what kept us alive then? You know, all these things are nonsense and logically make zero sense. If you sit down and think logically about any of it, none of it makes any sense.
No, it doesn't. And also, if you kind of disconnect the pharmaceutical industry with, I don't know, well-being, and see them purely as companies that are making products for a profit. All right. So, what is the difference ultimately between Pfizer and Samsung? There's no difference. They're both companies making a product, and they're selling you the product, and they're giving you a reason to buy the product.
Exactly that. And, you know, once drug companies became public limited companies, and they have to keep coming up with a blockbuster drug that's going to keep them afloat, because I don't know how long their patents last, but drugs come off patent so that everybody gets to access them, not so paracetamol's off patent, ivermectin's off patent, you know, all these drugs are off patent. So they have to keep coming up with blockbuster drugs all the time. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think Novo Nordisk are in line to make $3 trillion from their weight loss drugs.
They're the ones who made Ozempic, eh?
Yeah. So there's Ozempic, Mounjaro. So it's Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly who are the main players on weight loss drugs. And there is about 5 or 6 different weight loss drugs. And the most common ones that we know are Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, Saxenda. And I can't remember the others, but those are the main ones.
In one of your articles, you mentioned a number of celebrities that promote these drugs, and that's a major, major issue for me, because celebs never seem to get this right. They always seem to side with the wrong side of history.
Yeah, I mean, think of the number of celebs who were promoting COVID vaccines.
Yes.
I
wonder why that is, though, Sally. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I always had a lot of respect for Helen Mirren. Mm. And she said that she learnt in the early days to live on lentils and nothing, so that she would never have to take a job where she felt compromised. But I'm sure Sharon Osbourne is mentioning that she's taking Ozempic in order to get free Ozempic prescriptions, and you know, possibly paid for saying it. So it's a kind of endorsement.
There's something interesting also. Ozempic is a prescription drug.
Hmm.
That should already be signaling your alarm bells.
Yes, and as a prescription drug, you know, you're not allowed to, doctors aren't allowed to prescribe it to anyone who's got a BMI under 30. But then it's available online through private pharmacies, so people can just buy it. And that can cause a problem because, number one, you're not entirely sure what's in the drugs that you're buying. So a lot of them are cut with amphetamine. And taking an amphetamine will have the same effect as making you lose your appetite, but it will just, you know, make you, give you that horrible speedy sensation. Some people like that as a recreational drug. But it's another story.
I'm thinking of my family member who takes Ozempic to lose his appetite. It's so easy. Have a big plate of bacon and eggs in the morning that's been fried in lard or butter, and have coffee if you want. That's you've ground your own beans and you've added cream to it. I promise you, you're not gonna be hungry for the rest of the day.
100%. And, you know, that was one thing I really noticed when I was doing I did paleo keto, not just keto.
So paleo. So you had a few vegetables meat. In it.
No. Mm. Paleo as in meat, keto as in, you know, low carb. High fat, basically.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
And and it took probably a week or so, but I totally stopped thinking about food. Mm. And the weight came, you know, it really came off very quickly. And, you know, you might notice I'm over 40.
And no, you don't look it.
Once you get over 40, it is more difficult to lose weight. But seriously, I dropped a dress size, and, you know, you would be thinking at my age you would be increasing a dress size. So that was amazing.
As you know, I was recently in China, and something that is almost impossible to do there is ketogenic. Unless unless you really, really know, you know, the shops and all that kind of stuff, because they are typically Asian and they eat large amounts of noodles and rice. But here's what's so weird to me, Sally, and I mentioned this to Tim Noakes also, and to Zoe Harcombe, whose work is fantastic. You don't see many fat women in China. And I say fat women because that is a very specific observation. You don't see that many fat men either, but you see more fat men. But the point is that you see very few fat women in China, and yet they eat these high starch diets. And it's something that doesn't compute. I can't quite wrap my head around. And what Tim has argued is that it's because they also have a genetic history that might be more accustomed to, say, us, you know, in more westernized countries.
Well, this is true. And I ran a doctor's conference here with the American organization, Freedom Healthcare. And we had, I've forgotten, we had Sally Fallon Morrell from Weston Price. We had the father of the vegan diet. And those two were very interesting because Weston Price is obviously all about high dairy.
Yeah.
But they were showing us pictures of this, you know, the reason they come to the high dairy was because these villages in the Swiss Alps, you know, lived mostly on dairy, and look how healthy they were and what amazing teeth they had, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The other guy, Colin T. Campbell, that's his name.
Yes. Yes. He's well known for that whole vegan.
Yeah. And he came to the conclusion that vegan diet is great because of China.
Yeah. Because he did the China study, I think. Hey, sorry for interrupting.
Exactly that. Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. You're right. So he did the China study. So that got me to thinking, well, look, come on. You both can't be right.
Mm.
You know, it can't, you know. So what is the factor that we're missing here? And it may well be genetics. It may well be that if you talk to quantum biologists, you know, they are... they say that you should really only eat food that is indigenous to where you live because your body is used to and that's how you've developed and et cetera, et cetera. So there is an element that we're missing somewhere. And so it's not all about calories. It's not all about vegan or vegetarian or carnivore.
There's something else. But yeah, they also use chopsticks. And I mean, I don't know if you've eaten with chopsticks, but you can't really do very well with chopsticks.
No, they do better than us for sure. I don't know how they do the rice. I mean, I never get rice in my mouth with chopsticks.
I mean, that's what I'm saying is that you end up eating less food.
Yeah, maybe that. And eat slower, potentially. Mm. Funnily enough, in Tanzania, you rarely see a fat man. Rarely.
Oh, and
their diet the same. Lots of rice. You know, that rice is the staple. But you see far more fat women. But I think that's also a visually appealing, you know, it's part of the culture and
African culture. Yeah.
Yeah.
But something that really red pulled me quite a large amount a number of years ago, about staple foods in Africa, particularly, remember the book, Why We Get Fat? What's his name? And he also wrote Good Calories, Bad Calories. I've now gone blank.
I can't think either. Shall I have a quick Google?
Let me just quickly check because it's going to bug me now. I'll tell you now Why We Get Fat by Gary Taubes.
Okay.
And he's written incredible deep dives on rice and staple foods. And because he was trying to answer the question, why in so many African villages that are poverty stricken do you see so much obesity? And he was linking it to the staple foods that tend to get dropped by UN airplanes and that sort of thing, which is, high starch, big bags of starch, basically grains and that kind of thing. And that does feed back into what you were talking about earlier, that these things are not necessarily good for you. I'm just going to leave out Asia for now because I don't understand. There's something else happening there, which I don't know. It might have to do with the purity of the grain. I don't know. But by and large, the observation is exactly what you've been saying.
Yeah. And so I think we don't really know. We haven't really unraveled all the mysteries of diet and calories and what makes us thin, what makes us fat. We do know that, if you live on Haribos and baguettes, you'll probably be quite large. But in France, for example, I had a friend who lived in France as a child, and she said that the mums used to come to school with a chocolate bar inside a baguette as an afternoon snack. I don't know. I just don't know.
But the French are not very thin anymore.
No, not anymore, no. But I mean, we were all pretty thin in the 70s, to be fair. If you go back and look at pictures from the 70s.
Yes.
And McDonald's had only just been introduced, I think it was mid-70s. It got introduced. And I wonder how much fast food has got to do with the obesity crisis that we have now.
Yeah, I mean, both Noakes and Harcombe have said that a lot of that started changing due to that study by Ansel Keys, the cholesterol hypothesis. That he created. What did he call it? I can forget now. But it had to do with cholesterol, high cholesterol and all that sort of thing, which, of course, we know is also now it's not correct. Cholesterol is not something that you should be worried about.
No, because Zoe did a brilliant, she did her PhD looking at cholesterol, didn't she?
Yeah.
And she found that those with the highest cholesterol had the lowest heart disease.
Yes.
And Patrick Holford, who is very interested in diet and brain function, he will tell you how vital cholesterol is to a healthy brain, because our brain's mostly fat. So if you think about it, that makes total common sense.
I mean, one of your articles that you wrote here, I mean, this is certainly not in any way appealing. I mean, you have a 45-year-old woman who choked on her own vomit, 23-year-old man who died from vomiting, nausea, and rapid heart rate, a 56-year-old mom died of gastrointestinal illness with constant vomiting and diarrhea over 5 months, so she could lose weight for her daughter's wedding. These are side effects. And as far as I can tell, you don't get those side effects from having a steak.
Well, I'm sure Bill Gates will be able to tell us why that's not correct at some point. But of course you don't. But the interesting thing is that Lottie Moss, who's Kate Moss's little sister, she had a seizure taking Ozempic and was admitted to hospital. I mean, she wouldn't have been fat in any way, shape or form, but the modelling industry is brutal when it comes to weight. You can be a size 2 and be too fat to model. You've got to be a size 0. So, that's something that you don't know. But with anything, you know, with any blockbuster drug, you're going to get people thinking, well, how do we make this ourselves and we can sell it on the black market? And that's going to cause additional problems. As if the drug isn't bad enough itself. All those side effects are actually in the public information leaflet, but I bet it's not something your doctor tells you about.
Now, despite all the criticisms and all the negative press he's been getting, Bobby Kennedy has spoken out against these drugs.
Yeah, and he made the perfect common sense observation that you could provide every family in the US with 3 organic meals a day, nutritious organic meals a day, for less than you will be paying to prescribe Ozempic.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge, and it just falls on deaf ears. It's incredible.
I mean, so somebody listening to our conversation, Sally, and going, okay, all right, I get it. Drugs are not a good idea to help me lose weight, and I want to lose weight. What would you say are the things that people should consider?
Definitely consider paleo keto diet. Dr. Sarah Myhill's written a book about it. It's all there documented. Keto diet as well. Think about cutting out carbs, you know, gluten, definitely, grains, legumes. Remove those from your diet. Up your fat levels. Avocados are lovely. Butter's lovely. You know, frying stuff in beef dripping. Eating meat and fish. I've never tried the carnivore diet, but it really suits some people.
It's just boring.
It's boring, and I like vegetables. Mm. Fruit, you know, fruit does have a lot of sugar, but it's also got a lot of good stuff in it as well. But, you know, if you want to lose weight, stick with berries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, whatever berries you can get your hands on. And it definitely works. It definitely works. You do not need to take a weight loss drug. Also check your thyroid function, especially if you're feeling that sort of fluttering in your throat. Other signs are that your voice changes. It might get a bit deeper because there's, if your thyroid's a bit swollen, it puts pressure on your vocal cords. Or you can come to our thyroid retreat. So I've just launched, you know, I really like highlighting what's going on, but I'm also very focused on building the new. And I think we need new systems. We need new healthcare systems. We need new banking systems. Everything needs to be renewed. And as part of my small contribution to building the new, I have launched 2 health retreats. The first is for the chronic illness of thyroid dysfunction. And people are very wary of when they've got a serious diagnosis, and that can be a serious diagnosis. I think people are wary of looking for alternatives. But if you come to our thyroid retreat, you'll learn about all the alternatives. No one's going to force you to stop taking your medication, but you can learn.
Is it a physical retreat, like a physical location, or is it online?
In person, at a beautiful boutique hotel in Zanzibar. So it, you know, it's a natural healing vibe. Very experienced practitioner, excellent food. So, you know, we'll cater for people with thyroid issues, you with the diet that suits people with thyroid issues. And the one thing that people do not ever consider when they develop a chronic illness is what are the emotional issues that go on, go together with my chronic illness. And with thyroid, there's a lot of, you feel like you're being silenced, your voice is being crushed, your creativity is being crushed, you're not being heard, or maybe you're trying to be heard too much. So those are the emotional issues that can go along with thyroid issues, and we talk about those and how to deal with those. And that's a very important part of getting well from any illness. I don't know if you know this, Jem, but for men with prostate issues, Louise Hay, who wrote a book called You Can Heal Your Life, and she traced the emotional roots for all illnesses, and prostate comes down to feeling like you failed in business or in the workplace in some ways, which is interesting. And people who develop cancer tend to be very accommodating, you know, never putting themselves first, always making room for other people and not really for themselves. So there have been some very serious studies looking at emotional issues causing physical problems. And I think the main one is heart issues go along with being very angry, or can do.
What's interesting...
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's interesting about that also is the food that you consume also affects your mood and how you think about things. I mean, if you just eat McDonald's for a whole week, you're going to have brain fog and you're not going to be thinking very clearly. But if you start your day with, as I said earlier, bacon and eggs, you're not going to be hungry for most of the day, but B, you will be, you know, potentially on top form mentally and psychologically. I mean, and that has a huge effect on health.
Huge. And I used to belong to the Guild of Health Writers back in the UK. And we had an amazing chairwoman who put on some fantastic conferences or lectures. And we had one that was solely focused on reversing depression and anxiety just by changing your diet. And people, you know, they might love Iron Brew. I also wrote an article for the Times newspaper in London called, the headline was Misdiagnosing ADHD. And quite a lot of children's issues, you know, when they have concentration issues, are to do with food. They might have, you know, high sugary drinks, Coca-Cola, Iron Brew is one, you know, crisp sweets, stuff that sends kids crazy.
Well, I mean, fruit juice too.
And fruit juice, yes, fruit juice. Yeah. And although we think fruit juice is healthy, it's probably not if you have it every day.
Because, I mean...
might be a nice treat occasionally.
I mean, if you take, let's say, I don't know, 3 oranges and you juice them... you don't, in real life, eat 3 oranges. So you're consuming a huge amount of sugar and all sorts of other things that come in those oranges.
Exactly.
Which you wouldn't normally consume.
No, exactly. Exactly that. Sorry, we got sidetracked. So that's a very long-winded way of saying that, you know, we're going to be doing lots of these retreats, looking at... chronic illness. The first one we're doing is thyroid. The website is purehealthzanzibar.com. All the details are on there. We're launching another one today that is a mental health-based one, which is looking at your fight, flight, fear, freeze emotions and when you get stuck in those. And I think the last 5 years have hammered our mental health. You know, whatever side you were on, you know, whether you were totally believing in the narrative or like us, totally disbelieving of the narrative, our emotions have been hammered. And we need to get back some equilibrium for our emotions as well.
Are you hopeful, Sally?
Yeah, I honestly, this has been an ambition of mine for over 20 years, but I was too busy raising children to, you know, to be able to execute it. But they're grown up now, so it is an ambition. And for nearly 30 years, I think it is, I haven't taken any pharmaceuticals apart from the odd painkiller. So I had a tooth out the other day. Definitely, where's the ibuprofen? I haven't had antibiotics. I haven't had any steroids. I haven't had any kind of medication. And that's not to say that I haven't been unwell either. I've had all the usual things like, you know, flu and colds and coughs. But also in our family, we've treated very serious issues. Crohn's disease, cured. Pancreatitis, cured. Restless leg syndrome, cured. And we're not saying just controlled. We're saying the Crohn's disease 30 years ago, no attack since. Pancreatitis 10 years ago. Restless legs 25 years ago. You know, these are these are cures. Autoimmune disease, I had it in my right eye. I could have lost the sight in my right eye, cured. So it is possible to cure your illnesses and lose weight without using drugs.
Something I just want to point out, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not about losing weight. It's about getting your body into its default kind of configuration. Because if you're obese, that's not its default configuration. You can also be underweight, which is not the default configuration.
You know, exactly. And some people are naturally very slim. You know, I would describe myself as athletic. I was never skinny. So my default is a kind, you know, sort of athletic-y type body. But yes, and, you know, normalizing your weight also helps with so many other health issues as well. You know, if you've got a decent diet, if your body's much better able to repair itself if it's not full of toxic Oreos.
Yes. Yes. But there are vices that I think that we have, you know, just simply because we're human and we do also just enjoy a weekend with friends. You mentioned alcohol earlier, and that's one of my vices. I do enjoy a glass of red wine. I do enjoy a whiskey, but I don't drink any of the sort of super pop commercial drinks that are just high in sugar. You know, I mean, red wine generally is low sugar anyway. Whiskey and I think you said vodka, those tend to have, or tequila, those tequila tend to have low levels of sugar. And I think, I mean, unless you want to live like a monk and never been invited anywhere, you know, sure. But I think choose some of these battles.
Yes. And, you know, I'm a very social person. I like going out to eat. I like you know, meeting people in bars. And I don't want to be sitting there with a soda water. Yes. And I don't want to be never having a dessert. And I love chocolate. Chocolate is, you know, chocolate. Oh, my God, I could probably live on chocolate. I think there were actually two ladies in the US who lived on chocolate ice cream and whiskey, I think, and they were in their 90s. But, you know, with all these things, use sparingly. If, like me, you really did need to make a change, I did go hardcore with that diet probably for about 6 to 8 months. I have totally relaxed it now. And if I eat too much gluten, it definitely starts to show very quickly. So I just treat it as a, you know, I have a piece of cake occasionally when it's someone's birthday, or a chapati, or, but not often. Not like we would. I think we used to eat carbs twice a day. So we'd have toast for breakfast, soup and sandwich for lunch, and then root vegetables like potato with dinner. And I did fine on that for decades, and then until I didn't. Yes. So if you are struggling with your weight, you know, that is your body telling you you need to do something to change. It doesn't necessarily need to be as hardcore as carnivore, but, you know, take a good look at what you're eating and see what you can cut out. Cut out the carbs, definitely.
Although Zoe has argued that if you are going to be a vegan, you're going to need to consume supplements also, because you're going to be lacking
B12.
And so that's also where I have a sort of a conflict of interest, is if you need to take supplements because you're not getting it in your standard food or your diet, something is wrong. You shouldn't be required to take supplements. You should be getting it from your food.
Well, it's a clear red flag, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's telling you that, okay, this is, you know, you might like your diet, but this is what's missing from it. And it's not very often you see a healthy vegan, to be perfectly honest.
No, I haven't seen that many.
Vegetarian, yes. But healthy vegans, no.
And if you are plant-based or vegan, you have to eat so much food. You have to eat like a horse constantly throughout the day, because you know, you're always hungry.
Yeah. I mean, I did go to a really nice place in the Dominican Republic called Kira, K-I-R-A. And there they had vegan food, and I was thinking, oh, this is going to be just awful, but my eldest daughter at the time wanted to be vegan, and I thought, well, let's go and do this, and, you know, so it'll be great for her. But actually the food was delicious, but it was very well balanced. You've got veg and two veg, you know, we would have meat and two veg, but you've got veg and two veg, so you're not just having one sort of portion of vegetables. They were making vegan bread as well. So you could, you could eat sort of gluten-free bread, and that was all fine. And it was really good food, I have to say. So if you do a vegan diet properly, and my darling best friend, Carol, who died of breast cancer, she never, ever liked meat. In an era when nobody was a vegetarian. But when she was diagnosed with cancer, she totally changed her diet. So she cut out meat, which she never really liked. And she really began to transform. You know, before she changed her diet, she looked like that she was going grey and turning solid. She lost a lot of weight and started to look much healthier, and her tumours started to shrink as well. Unfortunately, she followed the doctor's advice, and once her tumour started to shrink, because she'd been diagnosed at stage 4, she went on to have chemo, but she was dead within a week because she had a bad reaction to it.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was an amazing transformation. So you do need to listen to your body, and we've been told not to, you know, right from being kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened in 2020. Listen to us. We are the most informed on what's best for you. Stay indoors, wear a mask, fear healthy people, you know, and take this injection in your arm.
Yeah, to close the gyms, yet keep the off licenses open. Come on.
Okay.
It was like a bad IQ test.
Let's come in for a landing. Will you give me your website for your retreats again?
It is purehealthzanzibar.com. We've got an Instagram page, Facebook page, website.
And how else can my audience follow your work?
You can find me at The Conservative Woman. So everything I've written, I think there's about 160 articles, 3 articles on Ozempic. I've got 1 in the pipeline to update. But everything I've written about vaccine injury, our health authorities, transgender agenda, anything that's controversial and not really being covered by mainstream.
I seem to have lost Sally, and just in case she is unable to rejoin, let me just say that I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Sally. But my name is Jerm. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.